When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, and welcome to the Hornet's Nest. I'm Josh. There's Chuck. Jerry's here. And this is Stuff You Should Know.
Josh's idea.
Yeah. As I was researching this, I started sweating like cartoon bullets off of my forehead, like I was Little Orphan Annie or something when she's startled.
Yeah. I get it.
Or Nancy. Nancy's a better one. Do you remember Nancy? With
sort
Sluggo?
Of. Yeah, yeah. I remember Nancy and Sluggo.
Yeah, so she is one of the great overlooked comic strips of all time, and she's still going on. She's got a new breath of life in her. She's using computers and the internet and everything, but great, like, almost kind of subversive humor and outlook that Nancy always had. Check it out.
I haven't looked at the funny papers in a long time. Do they still have the old favorites?
Yeah, but I don't think they call them funny papers anymore.
Because they're not funny. They never were.
No, no. Plus, no one wants to point out that it's made of paper.
The comics. Yeah. I used to love Beetle Bay, of course, Garfield in Bloom County.
Sure, definitely.
And when I got a little bit older, what was the one that got a little political that was so good?
Sally Forth.
No.
It got political? Doomsbury?
Yeah, not Bloom County, but the other one that was...
Doonesbury?
Yeah, Doonesbury.
Oh, yeah, that one was always political.
And then Beetle Bailey. Love Beetle Bailey.
What about Hagar the Horrible?
He was fine. Family Circus, I liked at the time, but looking back, it was the least funny comic in history.
It was cute.
Brenda Starr. Mark, right? Mark Trail.
Mary Worth. Mark Trail. What was going on with that guy?
It was just a nature propaganda disguised as a comic strip.
It really was.
You know, nature propaganda, save the earth and all that.
Big nature. So that's funny that you say that because there's a group of people who are involved in today's topic that possibly refer to their opponents as big nature. Weirdly, Chuck, like, I don't think they do, but the same sense and sensibility is still there. Jane right. Austen reference. Second one in two podcasts.
That's right. Can we just caveat this episode? You said it was a hornet's nest. This is about cats, domestic cats being an invasive species. I'm sorry, but they are. I love cats. I've got two cats. I've always had cats, always love cats. I will always have cats. So this mm-hmm. is nothing to do with being anti or pro cat. Right. It is just dissecting sort of the scientific problem of cats.
In the same way that cats dissect birds and small mammals for sport.
Right, which we talked about a lot, but we'll talk about it a lot more.
Yeah, so I'm with you, Chuck, and it is an issue and it's a problem, and one of the things that's contributing to making it a problem is that the two sides are so diametrically opposed and so over one another that there's just no conversation going on, and then the general public, like you and me, are just kind of blissfully unaware of this and then just get goosed every once in a while when the media kind of picks up this issue or runs a headline or an article about it. And the idea is, like you said, that that it's a pretty much widely held among wildlife and conservation biologists that cats, house cats, and specifically feral cats, are an invasive species around the world and they wreak enormous havoc, including species extinction in the habitats, in our backyards, in the habitats that they inhabit. But before we really kind of get into that and lay out the case one way or another, we should probably talk about the cat and where the cat came from and why they hang out in our backyards to begin with.
That's right. We should. They came, we think, from the Mideast with, not Mideast as in Virginia.
That's not the Mideast. That's
the Middle South. East.
That's the Mid-Atlantic.
Yeah, the Middle East of planet Earth.
Okay, gotcha.
Which was, these wildcats from the forest called Felis silvestris, which is interesting. I never thought about Sylvester the cat taking its
or
name.
Or Felix the cat.
Yeah, or Felix taking their names from the original cats. But that is the thought, is that they came from there, were most likely domesticated about 12,000 years ago. And we don't know for sure, but the general thought is once we started becoming an agriculturally based society and we had grain and seed to store, then the mice and the rats started coming around and the wildcats started coming around to take care of that problem. And humans were like, hey, this is fine with us. And then over time, some of those cats got a little friendlier than others. And the people were like, oh, you like a little scritch under the neck, huh? Well, mm-hmm. You want to come inside and have some milk? Shouldn't give cats milk. No. But they didn't know that at the time. And that's the best idea we have going of how cats initially became domesticated.
Yeah, and there's evidence of, of cats being domesticated that come from Cyprus, where there are no native cats. So cat bones and cat fossils are ostensibly domesticated because they would have had to have been taken there by humans by ship. It's possible the cat stowed away, but it's also just as possible that 8,000 years ago, when this cat bone on Cyprus is from, the cat was domesticated enough to ride along aboard a ship with sailors. And then there's another cat fossil from about 1,500 years earlier than that, so just under 10,000 years ago, where the cat was deliberately buried with the human, mm-hmm. which strongly also suggests domestication. So it's not a really big stretch that by about 12,000 years ago when we started storing surplus grain, that's about the time when cats and humans really started to kind of coincide.
Yeah, and I think you would probably best describe this as a mutualistic relationship at this point because both species are benefiting. We have talked in the past about commensalism.
Boo.
And maybe that's how one might have described it, which is like cats are eating the mice. Humans were like, fine, big whoop, but we don't really care. Mm-hmm. But I would say it's probably more mutualistic, don't you think?
Yeah, yes, absolutely. I posit that there's no such thing as commensalism. I think both parties somehow, some way,
yeah, sure,
always are either benefited or harmed by this situation. And this is a great example of that because if we're growing surplus, if we're growing grain, we have surplus to feed more and more people and to last us through the winter, whatever. We have these grain stores. If, mice and rats come along and eat our grain, that's a problem for us. And if the cats come along and eat the mice or the rats, that solves our problem. So the cat is getting to eat all of this food that's showing up at these grain stores, where otherwise they would have to go and hunt all over the place. The cat's benefiting. We're benefiting. Mutualism.
That's right. I agree.
Okay.
You don't have to talk me into it, buddy.
Okay.
Down good, with
good. I'll lay off then. I'll lay off. We need t-shirts, man. Do we still have t-shirts?
Oh, I don't know.
I don't either. I haven't seen them in a while.
We've never done a good job at promoting that stuff.
No.
That's right. So here's the deal with cats as an invasive species, though, is they are very hardy as a species. They survive, even though they don't have a real natural range, they can live in many, many different environments successfully. Mm-hmm. And there are obviously your pet cats, which are, I don't think we said what was the name of the domesticated cat finally.
Felis catus, which sounds like a Bugs Bunny cartoon, right. You know, like when Roadrunner would, would they freeze frame, you know?
Yes.
It's basically what they would write, but that's it.
Yeah,
that was
totally.
As unimaginative as it gets.
So you've got your feral cats and you've got your cats that live inside houses, but also freely roam outside, I have a pet cat, but it never comes inside because I don't like changing litter boxes. Mm-hmm. So we have outdoor cats. And then there's the feral cat. And those are the two cats that are causing problems. And they are very much different. And this is from the Grabster. He points out they're very different than other, quote unquote, domestic invasive species that you might have as a pet, because we talked about the Burmese python problem in Florida. Those aren't truly domesticated. And then there are feral dog populations in the world, and they do cause problems, but not like cats do.
No, definitely not. So apparently there's also like a really good case that's made that cats aren't truly domesticated either, which rings a bell to me from our animal domestication episode.
Yeah, I think I remember that.
I think they're considered semi-domestic, actually.
They're prisoners.
But for all intents and purposes, basically. Or no, they just come and go as they please. They hang around us as much as they want to, you know?
All right. Well, speaking of hanging out, let's take a little break. And we'll get to the grisly details of what these cats do. Because even though we've said it before, you might not have heard that episode. You might think, what would my sweet little cat do if let outside? Besides just creep around. Well, we'll tell you what they'll do right after this.
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on!
Today's episode is brought to you by Altoids because, let's face it, unraveling the mysteries of the universe is tough work. But with Altoids, your breath will be stronger than a black hole's gravitational pull, more intense than an alien abduction, and more reliable than your phone's battery during a podcast marathon. When it comes to needing intense freshness, Altoids have you covered. Altoids are stronger than your favorite conspiracy theory, more intense than the latest true crime docuseries, and more reliable than a Bigfoot sighting. They're not just mints, they're curiously strong mints. Find Altoids in the checkout aisle. Grab your tin today. Hey, everybody. If you're building a deck at work and you want to supercharge it, check out Canva Presentations. Work docs have been the same for too long. But Canva docs are different. They're visual. They grab readers' attention with images, charts, tables, and videos playable right in the doc. Plus, docs don't have to be just words on a page. You can make your docs pop with Canva docs.
That's right. And Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, HR, ops, marketing, and more, Canva presentations can be the solution for you. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it.
Canva presentations might be the most visually impressive presentations you'll ever use. Start with a stunning template, use it as a springboard for your design, adding images, graphics, charts, data visualizations, all from a massive media library. It's super easy to wow any audience with Canva presentations.
So start designing today at canva.com, designed for work. That's canva.com.
If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible.
That's right. It's even in the name. Use code STUFF20 at checkout to receive $20 off your first month. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included.
Yep. Again, use promo code STUFF20 and you'll receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Save on wireless with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. Switch now at Visible.com.
For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
All right, Chuck, so I think anybody who owns a cat that's not a 100% indoor cat has had some experience or other where their cat has shown up on their doorstep with a present of a bird, a mouse, a small rodent, baby squirrel, a baby seal, depending on where you are. but some little animal where the cat is saying either, hey, I want you to have this. I really appreciate all of the fancy feast. Or they theorize that possibly the cat is keeping a toy that it was playing with earlier. It's brought it home to, like, hang on to. Or it's following in its, I guess, kind of evolutionary impulse to teach other cats how to hunt.
Right.
It's teaching you how to hunt.
Right.
That's what it's bringing. Those are the big main theories that I saw.
Yeah. Like, see how it's done, buddy?
Yeah.
You see this bird? Can you do that?
And you may be horrified when the cat does that. You may also be like, you know, Felix, come on, you can't do that. Where's this bird's head anyway? And then just kind of forget about it. Put it out of your mind. Maybe you go to the trouble of burying the bird, which is nice if you do that. But you just move along with your day. Your cat might do that a few times a year. And if you multiply that by the number of cats who are roaming around and you multiply that by the number of feral cats, you suddenly get into really, really, really big numbers. And the idea of just how destructive invasive cats are really kind of comes into focus.
Yeah. So here are numbers from about 9 years ago in 2013. And this is kind of hard to track, but they do the best job that they can with these numbers. Domestic cats, these are to say pet cats and feral cats. And we should say that feral cats kill about three times as more animals and birds as domestic cats. But between 1.4 and 3.7 billion, with a B, birds, and 6.9, and this is a big range, to 20.7 billion mammals a year. This is every single year. And you found some more stats that really kind of put a cherry on top here. Rodents are linked to the extinction of 75 different species.
Mm-hmm.
Cats are linked to the extinction of 63 different species, where they have completely been extinct. 40 bird species, 21 mammal species, and 2 reptile species.
Right. So we should say that the species extinction, that's global, they think. Those numbers that you said, between up to around 4 billion birds and as many as 20-plus billion mammals every year, Chuck, that's in the United States alone. And not only in the United States alone, that's just in the contiguous 48 states alone every year. That's what this 2013 study between Smithsonian Institute and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service concluded.
Right. So there are people, and, you know, we'll get to, you know, some of the possible solutions later on. But if you talk to the head of the Smithsonian Migratory Bird Center, named Pete Mara, he will say very clearly that there should be a zero tolerance for free-ranging cats. They should be trapped. They should be removed and not returned. And then goes on to say more things that are a little more grisly should be done if you have no other choices, which is euthanasia, professional hunters, poisons, stuff like that.
Right.
But, you know, that sounds, and it is super harsh. And if you're a cat person, you're just like horrified right now. But what about the bird people, you know?
Right. So that's why there's the opposition on one side, or wildlife biologists and conservationists, and on the other side, you know, cat advocates and activists. And they're butting heads over this, and it's like a really big, it's a huge issue, one way or another. And one side is saying, just leave them alone. The other side is like, no, we can't leave them alone, or else they're going to continue to create species extinctions and kill billions and billions of birds and small mammals every year. And there's a lot of ways that they might do this. There's a story of a cat named Tibbles.
Oh, man, this is crazy.
It was a single female cat who arrived on a little island off of New Zealand called Stevens Island in the 1890s. There were no cats there. In fact, there were no predatory mammals, so much so that the little Stevens Island wren lost its ability to fly. It had no reason to fly. It had all the food it needed on the island. It didn't need to escape predation. So they lost their ability to fly and became one of just three flightless songbirds in the world. And now we have two species of flightless songbirds in the world, thanks to Tibbles and the litter that she had.
That's right. Tibbles arrived pregnant. And I mean, this is a very clear-cut case of one pregnant cat showed up, and literally Tibbles and the offspring made the Stevens Island wren no more. It is completely extinct.
Yeah. And so that's one single instance where they can say this cat did this. And I've even seen it like said in places like the legend goes, or the story goes, or something like that. So I'm not 100% certain on exactly how well documented it is. And more to the point, even if that is 100% accurate, it's really difficult to extrapolate that onto, you know, the rest of the world, onto wildlife in general. There's a lot of factors and a lot of pressures that go into a species going extinct. But from what I'm seeing, the conservation biologists and wildlife biologists who are doing meta-analyses of, you know, smaller studies and kind of putting the numbers together, they typically tend to make suppositions on the lower end.
Right.
So these numbers may actually be underreported. They may be much higher than what we think. But the upshot of it is that there seems to be cats seem to be, if not directly or solely responsible, in some cases they are largely responsible for some species extinction.
That's right. Cats also spread disease. If you look at rabies, in 2014, this is not that long ago, cats accounted for 61% of all rabid domestic animals in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So like, I don't know, people talk about like possums and raccoons and rats, and they're just like, oh God, they're, you know, rabid animals. Yet they will feed a stray, you know, feral cat, which is something that even, you know, animal people say you shouldn't do, because that just means there will reproduce and there will be more feral cats, and feral cats don't do so well. They struggle to live, and they get hurt, and they get hit by cars, and they get run over. And I think a large percentage of the litter doesn't even make it past 6 months. So if you love cats, you shouldn't be feeding feral cats.
Yeah.
It's a little, you know, it's hard to wrap your head around it, but that's, if you want a healthy population of cats, you shouldn't feed feral cats.
Right. It does seem very paradoxical and even mean, but we'll get into a little more why. But one of the things you said about effects cats can have on the ecosystem, especially feral cats, is that they in particular spread Toxoplasma gondii, which we had an entire episode on years and years and years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a type of parasite that can affect, that can create neurological symptoms in humans. It's pretty rare that it actually does that, but it can cause birth defects in children, in fetuses, which is why if you're pregnant, you're advised to stay away from litter boxes or handling right. cat feces, you know, in general, which is just good advice generally, because of Toxoplasma. And it actually can kill other animals too, right?
Oh, sure. And, you know, it spreads through those feces. So any warm-blooded, I mean, we can get infected. You know, humans can and do get I'm sure I have toxoplasmosis by this point. Any warm-blooded animal can get it. And, yeah, it can kill animals as large as a seal.
Yes. And the reason why cats are so important into this chain is the T. Gandhi eggs can only reproduce, or the parasite can only reproduce in the gut of a cat. So if you take cats out of the equation, if you take cats that are roaming around the landscape pooping everywhere, you take toxoplasmosis out of the equation largely too. And then lastly, Chuck, one of the other things, in addition to actually, you know, wreaking havoc on bird and small mammal and also vertebrate reptile and amphibian populations too, by directly eating them or killing them for sport, they're having an indirect effect on some other native populations of like hawks, owls, larger mammals that eat these things for food. Like, this is their food that the cats are killing and eating in some cases, or sometimes just killing.
That's right. And we've talked a lot about the trickle-down effect of removing anything from an ecosystem, and certainly birds are a vital part of any ecosystem, how they, spread the seed and pollination. Like, everything ends up being affected when you start extincting? Mm-hmm. Sure. Extincting birds.
Sure. And so I know it sounds very much like we're teeing off on cats. We're not. That's not the point. The point is to kind of get across that what you think of as like a lovable cuddle bug of an animal actually does have negative impacts on the ecosystem, in particular the ones that are feral, the ones that are unowned, the ones that don't have a home to go to, the ones that that it turns out we have zero idea of exactly how many there are, the feral cat populations.
That's right. Should we take a break?
Sure.
All right, we'll take our second break here, and we'll talk a little bit more about the problem and some solutions right after this.
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
Today's episode is brought to you by Altoids because, let's face it, unraveling the mysteries of the universe is tough work. But with Altoids, your breath will be stronger than a black hole's gravitational pull, more intense than an alien abduction, and more reliable than your phone's battery during a podcast marathon. When it comes to needing intense freshness, Altoids have you covered. Altoids are stronger than your favorite conspiracy theory, more intense than the latest true crime docuseries, and more reliable than a Bigfoot sighting. They're not just mints, they're curiously strong mints. Find Altoids in the checkout aisle. Grab your tin today. Hey, everybody. If you're building a deck at work and you want to supercharge it, check out Canva presentations. Work docs have been the same for too long, but Canva docs are different. They're visual. They grab readers' attention with images, charts, tables, and videos playable right in the doc. Plus, docs don't have to be just words on a page. You can make your docs pop with Canva docs.
That's right. And Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, HR, ops, marketing, and more, Canva presentations can be the solution for you. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it.
Canva presentations might be the most visually impressive presentations you'll ever use. You start with a stunning template, use it as a springboard for your design, adding images, graphics, charts, data visualizations, all from a massive media library. It's super easy to wow any audience with Canva presentations.
So start designing today at canva.com, designed for work. That's canva.com.
If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible.
That's right. It's even in the name. Use code STUFF20 at checkout to receive $20 off your first month. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month every month, taxes and fees included.
Yep. Again, use promo code STUFF20 and you'll receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Save on wireless with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. Switch now at Visible.com.
For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
So there are about 86 million pet cats in the United States, and I know I've talked about this before, about 25 to 30% of those cats are either full-time outdoor cats as your pet, or you let your cat outside, you know, for large parts of the day or whatever, indoor-outdoor cats, that, you know, it's it's a problem. I don't think people should let their cats outside. I think if you have a pet cat, it should be an indoor-only cat because of the lizards and the birds and the mammals that they kill, because of the disease that they can spread. I've always been an indoor cat person since I've been an adult. I grew up having outdoor cats, and there was a constant flood of dead animals on our front porch, you know, all the time. And it was pretty horrifying as a kid to grow up with that kind of thing. But this is one of those situations where, you know, we don't like to get on our high horse very often, but you should keep your cats inside. And if not wanting to deal with a litter box is your issue, then you might want to rethink your why you have cats.
Martha Stewart hawks one where, like, they send you a new fresh litter box every however long, and then you just pack up the old one, throw it away. Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah,
I mean, it stinks. I hate cleaning out the litter box more than anything, but I love birds and chipmunks more than I hate cleaning out the litter box.
That's a really good way to put it, Chuck.
Yeah.
So that's just free roaming cats is what they, what they're called, what you described. It's like they have a house to go to. They have people that feed them at that house. They're considered a pet, but they're allowed to run around the neighborhood as much as they like. So if we have about 86 million cats, that are pets, and 25 to 30% of them are roaming outdoors. That's a significant number. But from the censuses, the studies that have been conducted over decades, the feral cat population vastly seems to outnumber the free-roaming cat population. Some studies say, no, it's about the same, maybe, or probably a little more feral cats, maybe 30 million. That is the lowest I've been able to come up with is 30 million. That's the lowest estimate I've seen across the entire internet. I went everywhere on the internet, and the lowest I saw was 30 million.
Yeah.
Some sources put it more in line with about the total number of pet cats, that there's about 80 million feral cats running around, again, the United States alone,
right,
just the U.S. And that if that is the case, then you really do start to get into some really big numbers really fast about how much of an effect those, that 80 million feral cats could have on local bird and small mammal populations.
Yeah, and you know, if a cat, if a feral cat makes it to adulthood, which you know, like I said, the pretty high percentage die before 6 months of age, but if they do make it to adulthood, they are very efficient killers, and there are no natural predators for cats. And you might think, well, no, there's plenty of things that can kill a cat.
Sure.
There are, but their populations, like, you know, a cougar or something, there aren't many of those left anymore. Those populations have been decimated because of all the reasons that that might happen. And what you end up with is a lot of feral cats with nothing hunting them, but they're hunting everything else.
I found a 2013 Ohio State study. And they found that urban coyotes, we did another episode on coyotes, remember, Well, as their numbers are growing and growing, they're actually keeping feral cat populations in check.
Oh, interesting.
And as a result, some bird species, small mammal species, their numbers are rebounding because urban coyotes tend to keep feral cats at bay. Like, feral cats avoid them like the plague. The thing is coyotes tend to avoid humans.
Right.
So the feral cats have just been hanging around buildings, offices, businesses, like human-built areas, and avoiding kind of more natural urban areas like woods and parks and tree forested areas, that kind of thing, where the coyotes hang out. So the wildlife is protected in the forested woody areas of a city, but they're prey like around human habitation, like buildings and offices and stuff.
Right, which makes sense. Yeah. So we've outlined the problem. It is really sad because I love cats and I don't like the idea of cats being a problem, but they are. So what are the solutions? Josh, what are the solutions?
You're leaving that to me, huh?
Yeah, we'll both talk about it, but I'm teeing you up.
So one of the solutions that, and this is, if you're a cat advocate, an activist, you are probably very much in favor of a type of approach called trap, neuter, release, TNR programs.
Right.
These were developed, the earliest I saw was in the late 90s, where animal control, like for a county or a city or something like that. If you have a trap, neuter, release program, if you find a cat, you capture it, you take it to the shelter, the vet there spays or neuters the cat. They clip the tip of the cat's ear off, and then you release it back into the wild, a feral cat. And as they're doing this, the point of trap, neuter, release is that the cat is not euthanized. So it's an end to euthanasia as far as animal shelters. Like, you know, before trap, neuter, release, if a cat got picked up by animal control and made it to the animal shelter, that was it for the cat. This is a chance to give cats the opportunity to live their life out. But you've taken away their ability to reproduce, so you're now managing the reproduction rate of a feral cat colony. And if you get your hands on enough of these feral cats and you spay and neuter enough of them and you keep up with it fast enough, studies have shown that you have a really good chance of stabilizing and then eventually diminishing the feral cats in your area.
Yeah, and there have been a lot of studies on this. There was one in 2019 that found over a decade. It's called high-intensity TNR. Was very successful at reducing feral cat populations. There's high density and low density TNR. And the idea it seems to shake out is that unless you are doing high density, unless you're getting to like 75% of the population, then they say you might as well not even be doing it.
Right.
So high intensity TNR really works. And then in this one study, it had a couple of other interesting parts to it is they weren't just measuring how many feral cats were out there, but they're trying to do studies that like say, hey, we want healthy cat population, so let's look at harm reduction for feral cats. So if you have overpopulation and too many feral cats, then Ed points out, there's a lot of misery going around.
Right.
They struggle to find food more. They spread disease more. They are constantly pregnant. Cats reproduce like bunnies do. They can have up to 3 litters a year and up to, you know, 12 to 15 cats per litter. Mm-hmm. And, you know, these cats walking around constantly pregnant, constantly giving birth to kittens that don't live more than 6 months, constantly looking for food because they're overstressed is not, if you're a cat lover, again, that's not what you want. And so they tried to measure the harm reduction, and they found that high intensity TNR reduced preventable cat deaths by 30% or 30 times.
Yeah, 30 times, not 30%,
yeah.
30 times fewer preventable cat deaths. And they defined preventable cat deaths by cats that were picked up and euthanized at a shelter or cats that died before reaching adulthood. And
right.
Cats have a really high mortality rate for young cats. I saw a study from 2003 or 4 that found a mortality rate of about 48% within 3 months of birth.
Oh, wow.
And 75% within 6 months of birth.
Okay, yeah, and that's the number.
This is, you want to talk about harm reduction. The most common cause of death was trauma. So they were getting mauled by dogs or eagles or owls.
Hit by cars.
Yeah, getting hit by cars. So it is a really harsh, unhappy life for feral cats. And the premise of TNR is, okay, we can actually lead to a reduction in these kittens that are being born in these horrible conditions, living 3 months and then getting mauled by a neighborhood owl or something like that. Like, that's a bonus. That's a plus. But you hit on something that's really important, Chuck, that there is a pretty decent amount of research on... Actually, that's not true. There's not that much research on the effectiveness of trap-neuter release. But the studies that have been done on them that are high-quality studies do emphasize that, no, there's definitely a threshold to where you're just completely wasting time and energy. And even worse than that, if you're not hitting, I think, what did you say, about the 75% threshold of spaying and neutering feral cats in a given colony?
Yeah.
If you're not hitting that 75% mark, you're doing worse than nothing, because the people who are aware of TNR, the TNR program in your city and county, think you're doing something, but
right.
You're not. It's worse than doing nothing, because if everyone knows you're not doing anything, then people might say, we got to do something.
Mm-hmm.
But if they think you're doing something, but you're not actually really doing anything, that's harmful. And that's ultimately harmful, not just to these kittens that are being born by that, like that, but also to the birds and small mammals that those kittens are eating within their 3 to 6 months on Earth.
That's right. TNR is expensive. It takes a lot of time. You know, trapping any animal is hard. Like one of our dogs, Charlie, we trapped. It was a feral dog in the woods, and it took 5 days to trap these dogs. It's a commitment to trap an animal.
Wait a minute. You have a dog that you trapped that was feral?
Yeah, Charlie.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, Charlie we found in the woods with 4 other dogs. And just, you know, these dogs would not come near anybody when they were puppies. And we spent with our friends, Adair and Elliot, spent, I think, yeah, like 5 days trying to trap wow. these dogs. And Charlie was the last one that was holding out that we could not get. And Burger King cheeseburger is what finally did it.
That'll do it every time.
And Charlie spent the first, you know, as a result, spent the first 6 years of her life very afraid of people and would just do rounders through our house when people would come over and not come near anybody. But since my daughter came along, more people at the house, and just over time, she's just the sweetest girl now. Goes up to everybody
awesome.
After like 20 seconds, and it used to take days or weeks.
Oh, that's cool.
It's a great success story there, but
story short. I have to say, Chuck, while you were describing tracking Charlie and her pals, I just imagine that music and that scene from Planet of the Apes where they're rounding up the humans with nets.
Right.
Is that basically what was going on?
No, we had a big cage trap.
Oh, gotcha. So no nets on horseback?
You know, like dog goes in to get food, and then the door swings shut. But okay. Charlie was very smart, and Charlie just turned 13, so...
Oh, happy birthday,
Charlie.
She's doing
great. But a long way of saying that trapping an animal takes a lot of time, and cats are super smart, and it's time-consuming, it's expensive, and TNR is just, it's hard to get a lot of people rallying around it and funding it, especially if you're expecting, like, the county to fund it. Like, most of that stuff is going to come from donations.
Plus, also, if you're a wildlife or conservation biologist... You might say, no, I don't want to do TNR at all. Like these cats, like if let's say you pick one up at 6 months and you neuter it and release it into a feral colony, most of those feral colonies are managed by the city or the county, meaning that they're fed, right? Which ends up attracting more abandoned cats that haven't been neutered or spayed yet. And then worse than that, let's say these cats live an extra 4 or 5 years. How many animals do they kill? Yeah, they're not reproducing, but you're releasing them back out to kill these birds and mammals. And those biologists say, this is too big of a problem to take up TNR programs. We need to do something else.
Right.
And everybody says, okay, well, what else? What can we do? And the biologists clear their throats and like kind of like put their hands in their pockets and look at one another and say, yeah. like, who wants to say it? And the one who's on his phone not paying attention suddenly realizes everyone else is taking a step back.
Right.
And he's up.
Oh, boy. Oh, and that's me?
Yep.
Yeah, it's a terrible thing. But the other solution is that, you know, I don't even want to say it, but it's killing cats. Australia does this pretty effectively. In 2016, they began using a poison. Here's the deal, is cats probably won't eat poison. So they have these traps where a cat will go in and it will spray their fur with poison. The cats groom themselves by licking their fur. They ingest the poison and they die. And this is, you know, Ed points out, he's like, listen, this is, no one cries for the dead rats and the dead mice, but, you know, dead cats is, you're going to get some public outrage.
Yes, for sure. And there's, I mean, there's a lot that's mixed up with that. One, you know, we've chosen cats. There's like only just a small handful of animals on the planet. Out of all the animals on the planet, there's such a select group that we've said, come, come live in our human world, our human culture.
Yeah.
And cats are one of the top ones. I mean, like, cats are pets.
Come into our house.
Right. Yeah. Have my milk. And again, the cat's like, please, this is really bad for me. I can't turn it away. Please stop tempting me. But that's a huge part of it. So like even knowing that cats are out there having this huge effect on birds and mammals, and like possibly creating species extinction, it's still like, That doesn't just trigger something in us humans like, oh, well, then we got to get rid of cats.
Right.
That's just not how it works. But that's what a lot of biologists suggest we do. And not get rid of all cats, but, you know, get rid of feral cats, like do away with TNR programs and instead go back to, if you pick a cat up, you take it in and euthanize it, and that's that. Because not only is it not reproducing any longer, it's also not killing small animals in the time where between where it's picked up and spayed and neutered and then released back into the wild, and then the time that it dies of whatever cause, you know? But again, how are you ever going to get anybody behind something like that?
Right.
Do we even want to get behind something like that? And, like, is that a thing that humans would want to take on? Like, okay, we've got this big problem. We need to handle it. If we handle it this way, we can probably handle it basically once and for all. But is that something we want to do? Is that okay to do?
Yeah, I mean, these are the big questions. I hope you're not looking to me for an answer.
No, I mean, it's unfortunately, it's definitely rhetorical right now. I mean, some people would answer, obviously, one way or another.
Yeah.
But I think there's a lot of people who are like, man, I really do care about birds, and I really do care about chipmunks and biodiversity, and I really don't like invasive species. Like, what am I to do, you know?
Yeah.
It's, well, a tough one.
At the very least, if you have outdoor cats, bring them inside.
Yeah, and that's another thing, too, is one of the things that you would have to do part and parcel with this is, you know, in most cities and counties, you have to get a license to have a dog.
Right.
You don't necessarily have to do that for a cat. You could start creating laws like that, create leash laws for cats. Like, really step it up and say, we love cats. You can have a cat, but you have to keep your cat in the house. If your cat's out of the house, you have to keep your cat on a leash. If a cat's feral, it's going to get picked up. So there's stuff you can do. It's just a question of will is what it is.
Yeah, and, you know, when I said that before, I got met with emails of, but my cat loves being outside. All they do is want to be outside. It's because they want to go kill things.
Yeah.
Almost exclusively. Like, cats love to lay in the sunshine, but that's why you'll find them on sunny spots inside your house. And those sunny spots are just fine. The cats want to go out and kill things. That's why they scratch at the door if you let them out once. And, you know, I know I'm fighting an uphill battle here, but I love cats and I hate the idea of running over a cat in my car. That's very traumatizing for an individual and a family.
And the cat.
Sure. So that's where I stand. Go ahead and email me if you're mad at me.
So there's a group of vocal critics and opponents to the very people who produced these studies starting in 2013, and basically anybody who criticizes TNR programs, who say these studies that are getting all of this media exposure, they're based on like bad science. Their mm-hmm. numbers are inflated. They're basically making all this stuff up. One of the arguments that they make is that cats tend to prey on old or weak members of like bird or small mammal species that probably wouldn't have made it to reproduction time anyway. So they're not actually having an effect on the population.
Come on.
And there's answers to all these too that they've had. There's actually like, there's a flame war going on between this group of wildlife biologists and a specific group of like cat advocates. And they're like answering one another and calling one another out. But one of the answers to that is, well, okay, that's still, there's still animals that are suffering harm because cats are killing them. Even if they were going to die anyway, they're still being mauled by a cat. And then also, what data are you basing that on, that cats tend to kill infirm and weak members of species?
Right.
Like, where'd that come from? So each side, in classic 2020s fashion, is accusing the other of basically basing all their stuff on junk science, making
right.
things up, making kind of character attacks, being snide to one another. It's just a beautifully 2020s argument, you know? So it's interesting to read about, but then you step back and you think, this is really serious stuff. We need to do something. Everybody says we've got to do something, either a good TNR program or something. We can't just keep going on like this.
Yeah, because doing nothing creates a colonies of feral cats that are not living their best life.
Right. Whew. You got anything else?
No, not right meow.
Okay. Well, if you want to know more about cats as invasive species and in particular trap neuter release programs, you can read all about that stuff all over the internet. There's a ton of it out there. And since I said there's a ton of it out there, it's time for listener mail.
I'm going to call this Greenbrier Bunker Addendum. We heard from a few people that have been there, taken the tour, and had other interesting things to say. And this is from Greg Soester in Columbus, Ohio.
Okay.
Let me see here. Let me skip the beginning. In 1995, my family returned to the Greenbrier. They had previously been there in 1991 for a Christmas stay. This time, the bunker was known by the general public. And we signed up for the guided tour. So I guess when they went in 1991, it was still not known as a thing. So they were those kind of shrouded in mystery at that point.
Okay.
Here we go. Number one, the back entrance also has an enormous blast doors with a very long hall leading to the under the mountain. A truck has to be able to drive in. The air pressure when they close it is amazing. Other interesting rooms include a dentist's office, a surgical operating room, and a crematorium, a TV studio, and a water purification plant. The answer, and we heard from quite a few people here, families do not go to the bunker. Each member of Congress has an assigned bunk, and each bunk has their prescription medicines fully stocked and spare prescription eyeglasses for everybody as well.
Oh, that's such a great touch.
Yeah, otherwise you got
all glory of Vanderbilt.
Right. Congress arrives by plane. There's a giant airstrip about 10 miles away, and the Army built a wide superhighway from the airport straight to the bunker. Secret Service would run drills to get the president to the bunker in 11 minutes or less.
Wow.
And then finally, it is strange to drive there because it was windy, and it was a two-lane road, and then suddenly the last 10 miles, it's like a racetrack. I remember joking to my wife that the Greenbrier had a heck of a driveway, so they're talking about the superhighway that leads right to it.
Right.
And just to finish out, Greg says the entire hotel staff and many townspeople knew about the secret for decades, and they kept the secret out of a sense of duty and pride. They hated that when the secret was revealed by Mr. Ted Gupp, because the national treasure was lost.
That's pretty neat. So who is that from?
That was from Greg in Columbus, Ohio.
That's right. Thanks a lot, Greg. That was a good one. Appreciate that info. And if you want to be like Greg and send along some info to us, we'll try to sort through it from all the hate mail we're getting from cat lovers in the not-too-distant future. You can wrap it up, spank it on the bottom, and send it off to stuffpodcast@iheartradio.com.
Stuff You Should Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
In Puerto Rico, there's adventure around every corner and natural treasures waiting to be explored, like El Yunque, the only tropical rainforest in the U.S. Get swept away by natural beauty and come away with unique stories that could only be experienced in Puerto Rico and that remind you why you travel in the first place. Visits end, but stories last forever. You don't become a part of the island, it becomes a part of you. No passports required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com. Today's episode is brought to you by Altoids because, let's face it, unraveling the mysteries of the universe is tough work. But with Altoids, your breath will be stronger than a black hole's gravitational pull, more intense than an alien abduction, and more reliable than your phone's battery during a podcast marathon. When it comes to needing intense freshness, Altoids have you covered. Altoids are stronger than your favorite conspiracy theory, more intense than the latest true crime docuseries, and more reliable than a Bigfoot sighting. They're not just mints, they're curiously strong mints. Find Altoids in the checkout aisle. Grab your tin today. Childproofing people's homes is hard, but Duracell is making it just a bit simpler. Not only are they committed to educating parents, caregivers, and medical professionals about the importance of battery safety, they make the only lithium coin batteries with a non-toxic bitter coating to help discourage children from swallowing them. Duracell even features child-secure packaging designed to avoid accidental opening. Learn more at Duracell.com/powersafely. Available on 2032, 2025, and 2016 sizes.